The Cultural and Outdoor Resources Finance Committee will come to order 8:30, March 17th. Thank you all for coming on this very special day. It was a special day in our family, to my father. And we always just assumed that Irish was something above average. Until early in my life, maybe I was four or five, the boys were outside, I was in the house. My mother and father never ever argued, raised their voices. But on this particular day, voices were raised and there was an argument going on, and I snuck out of the house but didn't go too far away. And the last thing I heard was my mother saying, "And I'm going to tell the children that Grandfather Yost came from Germany." And she came out of the house, storming out of the house, and said, "You kids come up here." And the boys came really fast, and so they knew too that this was something that was serious. And she stood there, she had an apron on and a tan dress, and she stood there and shook her hands, "Don't you ever forget that Grandfather Yost came from Germany." And she stormed out and ran down in the field, or walked down in the field, just to cool off. And I looked at my brother Paul and I said, "What's Germany?" And he said, "It's a country like Ireland." And I thought, oh my goodness. Never heard, can't remember the after effects of the whole thing, but I remember that incident. And so it was the first time that I had known, the other kids probably knew, but the first time I knew that there was another country besides Ireland. And America, of course. But thanks for celebrating this with this committee. And today we're going to find out how we're going to protect the forests and plant from pests in Minnesota. Department of Ag is here, Gear Friso and Bob Cope. Thank you for coming. And I would like to add the Lazard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council use of the outdoor fund and how they spent. So if we can move along, that would be really helpful. It would have helped if I hadn't told my story too. Nevertheless, welcome to the committee.
And thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. And I have to confess, I'm Norwegian, not Irish, but I didn't wear green flags. So. Again, thank you for allowing us to come and talk a little bit about the appropriation we received. In your packets, you should have a couple of informational updates. There's an update on the situation with EAB. I do need to update that update in that there has been an additional 15 EAB fines, which are located in the Tower Hill Park, about 2 miles from the initial infestation site. So that crosses into Minneapolis, and then one additional tree just across the street from that park, across the university. So now there's we believe it's all part of the same infestation, but a little larger than we had first determined. And also, as part of that update, I'll just mention that Minnesota is the first state to apply for and receive a permit to introduce biological control agents for EAB, so we're looking forward to that. You should also have received our most recent forest protection quarterly report, and there's also sort of a Reader's Digest version of that, a fact sheet that summarizes that information. As you know, the legislature appropriated $2 million from the Outdoor Heritage Fund and directed that $1.875 million of those dollars be delivered in grants to municipalities and organizations that address EAB. Following that appropriation last summer and fall, we did establish some stakeholder meetings to assist us with guidance on how we should deliver those grants. Based on that guidance, we did develop a three-tiered approach. We took the funds and sort of divided it up into two pots of money. We targeted $1 million of the funds for incident response, and those were directed at communities with known infestations. So at the time, that was St. Paul and Falcon Heights. And then we took the remaining $875,000 and targeted that for communities that were doing planning and preparedness in preparation for that infestation. And then the remaining $125,000 following the guidance of the legislation, was for technical assistance to be used in training local units of government to prepare and respond to future infestations. And we've been working in very close cooperation with the League of Cities, DNR, and the university. The initial request for proposals was on October 7th. We reviewed applications on November 20th. We had a review committee looking at those proposals, composed of Department of Agriculture, Department of Natural Resources, USDA, the Minnesota Forest Resource Council, and then the League of Cities. And we had a total of 76 applications. We made 18 awards. Those awards were made on January 15th. And then in your handout, there should be a list that kind of summarizes who received those awards and what those amounts were. So with that, I'll stand for questions.
Did we find another infestation place since the awards were granted?
Madam Chair, that's correct. We believe it's an actual a part of the initial infestation. It's about 2 miles away. So it's probably part of the original one. It just, we hadn't found it up until this point. So it's an indication that the infestation is larger than was first thought.
And where was that?
It's just 2 miles to the west. So it's in Minneapolis in what's the name of the park? Tower Hill Park, right along University Avenue.
Representative Nunez.
Thank you. So there is no incident response money left to send to Minneapolis to deal with that?
Madam Chair, the city of Minneapolis did received one of the larger grant awards, and that was because of the very close proximity of the city. So, but that is correct. We did award all the funds that had been appropriated to us.
You had $125,000 left over. Has all that been spent?
Madam Chair, it has not all been spent yet. Most of it has been obligated. We do have a position that is working, utilizing some of those funds, and it's been working with the cities and also DNR in helping facilitate and develop some response plans.
Was that through the Park and Rec Board? They're the drivers or the ones that put in the request, and they're the ones that are monitoring?
Madam Chair, yes, that's correct, in Minneapolis.
And they're the ones that submitted a plan?
Madam Chair, that's correct.
Continue, Representative Guinness.
Thank you. I'm troubled when I look at that the city of St. Paul, and I'm glad they got the money that they did, but one would have to figure that the little board didn't say, oh my gosh, here's the city line, I can't cross it. So common sense says that, gee, of course, it didn't stop at the border, and that Prospect Park would have been a likely place of infestation, obviously, because you looked there and found it. So I am troubled by that lack of foresight. Is there any money left over for incident response that you can give to Minneapolis for this or to the Park and Rec Board? I know they had planning money, but everybody had planning money.
Madam Chair, Representative Joaquin, all the funds have been awarded, so there is no more incident response funds available for.
Representative Wiginia.
I'm talking about the $125,000 that was left over. That every piece of that has been obligated?
Madam Chair, Representative Wiginia, I would have to check, but I don't believe the entire amount has been obligated. My estimate would be probably two-thirds, half to two-thirds has been obligated.
I think it would be nice to know exactly what has been obligated, what has been left, and if that might be available to help in Prospect Park.
Madam Chair, Representative Wagenius, I will get that exact figure for you.
Thank you. Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to the testifiers, is there any evidence whatsoever that tree removal slows down the spread of emerald ash borer?
Madam Chair, Representative, tree removal has been tried in many, many states, and unfortunately it has not been successful. In this particular situation, in the original St. Anthony Park neighborhood, we initially thought we had a very small area, and we had done some dendrology age tests, and it appeared to be a relatively young infestation. And that neighborhood is also surrounded by a non-tree urban or industrial area, so there was some hope that by removing the trees that we could at least contain it or slow it down. There is evidence that certain directed tree removal, you can slow it, but it's not. Nobody has been able to eradicate this by tree removal. So.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I hate to give people the impression that we can stop this or really seriously impact its progress by tree removal. It's just apparently not so. And I think along with, I understand the desire to remove infected trees and to take down trees that are dead, to remove the threat of falling limbs, et cetera. But I think at the same time, we need to clearly deliver the message that it's moving ash products from area to area that is a big problem that we really have to get a handle on, and whereas I think some of these funds should be invested.
Madam Chair, Representative, that's correct. And the department receives funding from USDA APHIS, and much of those funds go towards the regulatory aspect. We have authority to restrict the movement of firewood and tree cuttings and so forth. So really that has been our agency's primary focus, is to at least contain the spread and slow it down for as much as possible to allow the science to catch up if there's some possibilities.
Could you fill us in on how the first decision was made that there would be incident response grants and planning preparedness grants and the amount of money? Did we do that or did you do that?
Madam Chair?
Mr. Hope.
Bob Cook, I'm an entomologist with the Department of Agriculture, and I've been working on the administration of the grant programs, and that decision was made through the advisory committee that we put together early on after receiving this appropriation, the committee made up of, you know, various stakeholders, legislators, agency folks, university folks, people representing nonprofit groups. And that committee thought strongly that some of these funds should go to St. Paul, because at that point that was the only community that had an infestation. But then also not to put all the funds there, like some others have suggested, you know, it's likely that, the pest was already further spread, so they wanted to get some resources to other parts of the state as well. So that's why we had kind of the two levels of funding, some going directly to the infested area and some going to non-infested areas, but being weighted towards with proximity to the known infestation in mind, to try to get those resources somewhat closer to the known infestation, in theory to hopefully slow the spread up to the non-infested areas.
And was the is $1 million all gone? I know that it's obligated, but is it all gone?
All gone in the sense of the city of St. Paul, they and the other awardees, they have not spent all those funds yet, but it has all been obligated from our department to them. Is that correct?
And if you could, when you answer Representative Wagenius's questions and supplies with information, could you tell us what the $1 million was spent on? That would help be helpful. Because they, or was obligated to, rather than spent on, because you said that hadn't been all spent, but it's obligated to, for what? Mr. Cook.
Madam Chair, I think you guys have received our quarterly report. At the end of that report, there's an appendix which includes a summary of the various projects that have received funding. So that might give you a little taste of what these funds are expected to go towards.
So, Madam Chair, if additional detail beyond what's in there would come.
Thank you. Well, you were quick. Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you very much. Representative Genius.
It is my understanding, though I don't sit on the Ag Committee, that the department recommended that you all, that Ag no longer do this function of when an invasive gets into Minnesota of working on it, and that function be picked up by DNR. Since there was no pre-planning of that suggestion, just kind of a fait accompli on the part of the department, I am concerned about the continuation of the work on the emerald ash borer. My specific question is, you have gotten permission from the U.S. government to have some biocontrol. How is that going to proceed? Who is going to do the work?
Ms. Cheney.
Madam Chair, Representative Wagenius, I'm Quinn Cheney, the Policy Director at the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. And the governor's budget actually proposed eliminating some of the work that we do on the gypsy moth program, but didn't affect the emerald ash borer program. The agriculture budget that came out of the House Ag Finance Committee did recommend eliminating most of the department's invasive species activities, and we're still assessing how that will impact what we do going forward. Of course, all of that still, there's still many steps in that process, that budgeting process, but that was not a Department of Agriculture recommendation.
Well, eliminate
Representative Wagenius.
This is difficult for this committee to deal with because we've had no interaction on that issue. And eliminating the gypsy moth, it's wholly different than dealing what we have to deal with in the emerald ash borer. So my question remains, What about the biocontrols? Who is going to be working on them now?
Ms. Cheney.
Madam Chair, Representative Wagenius, as I mentioned, the House Finance Committee just made those recommendations last week. We're still assessing how we will carry out those programs should those appropriations get enacted. I'm happy to share information with you as we go forward in figuring that out, but at this point, we're still trying to assess what we will still even be doing on invasive species and what responsibilities other agencies or other organizations might also be taking over.
So this is not real helpful. We're seeing some of the results of some of the cuts that we're being asked to take. And you're really leaving us up in the air.
And do I understand, Representative Wagenius, then that the committee of the Agriculture Committee, Finance Committee, just said that they weren't going to fund this anymore, they weren't going to do this anymore, and that DNR could do this?
That's my understanding, Madam Chair.
Is that a interagency agreement, or is that just a financial decision by a legislative committee? Ms. Cheney.
Madam Chair, that was a recommendation from the House Ag Finance Committee. That was not part of the governor's budget recommendations.
And Ms. Cheney, did you oppose this at the committee meeting?
Madam Chair, we expressed concern for the funding reductions, but we also recognize that there are significant reductions that have to be taken. We expressed support for the governor's budget recommendations, and I think we'll continue to work with the chairs of the committees to make sure that whatever the legislature enacts, that we can actually carry out.
Representative Wagenius, were you consulted with on that decision before it was made?
No, Madam Chair, I was not. And here is the troubling thing that I'm picking up in this testimony. When you say we're not going to do any more on gypsy moth, that is acknowledging that this infestation is in Minnesota and nothing can be done, that they kind of failed, the department failed to keep that away. So they're not going to fund it anymore, and that was the governor's recommendation. We never heard in our committee that there was a recommendation for DNR to pick up that cost. We heard nothing about that, zero. So it made sense that if you're not going to me, that if you're going to be cutting one prevention when something actually gets here, dealing with it when it gets here, that ag was going to drop it all. I mean, that was the only other thing they were doing, was Emerald Ash Borer, and there was a resistance initially to doing anything. So it didn't surprise me once that recommendation was made by ag, but that was the consequence. But no, we weren't consulted, and I don't think DNR knew a thing about it. In fact, all my indications are that DNR didn't know that this was coming.
Thank you. We may have to have further discussions.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Keep me aware of what's going on, too, Ms. Cheney.
Absolutely.
Thank you,
Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. Julie Blackburn from Bowser. How did you use the money? Exactly as was said, I bet, huh?
Absolutely.
Thank you.
projecting.
Assistance.
Okay, well, Madam Chair and committee members, oh, there it is. It came up. Thank you very much for having us here today to talk about what we have done in implementing the Clean Water Fund appropriations. My name is Julie Blackburn. I'm the Assistant Director for the Minnesota Board of Water and Soil Conservation. We have a handout, a copy of the PowerPoint presentation for you. It's fairly short. We also do have available on our website the full report on the Clean Water Funds that was submitted on March 1st of the details of all of these. So what I want to do is take you through some highlights of how we went through the process of getting the funds out and where we are at with that. First of all, the appropriations that were provided to Bowser for the Clean Water Fund in this fiscal year were about $18 million. They included a number of different categories. Most of them were available through competitive grant opportunities. I'm not going to go through each one of them. Just to let you know, though, that there was a variety of different types of units of government that were eligible for the different types of programs. We also had some direct appropriations for the Anoka Conservation District, Hennepin County, and the Conservation Corps of Minnesota. So the total of $18 million, like I said, the majority of that went out through competitive grant programs. So the competitive grant program, we made our RFP available to the public or to the public and those that were eligible for that in October. When we put the competitive grant application out, we put a number of criteria in there that were trying to get at the qualitative nature and the quantitative nature of how they addressed both impaired waters and surface water protection efforts, as well as groundwater. So this is our ranking criteria that we put out there, the qualitative factors. Water quality outcomes, you'll see at 25 points, really demonstrating the ability to do something. The applicant needed to demonstrate their ability to make a difference in water quality. 30 points were for prioritization and a plan, and that plan could be one of several types of plans, including a TMDL implementation plan and an approved TMDL, as well as a local surface water management plan. Readiness to proceed was given 10 points, and that meant that if they have actually identified landowners, properties, project locations, and were ready to go, they were given the full 10 points. If they only had an idea of that they wanted to do certain projects but didn't have those nailed down, they only received half of those points. So we were really trying to get at that readiness to proceed. Augmented funding, if they could leverage and the ability to leverage, was given 10 points. Long-term public benefit. So if we knew that this was going to be something that was either permanent or very long-term, that was given 10 points. And we also gave points for consistency with groundwater plans, trying to emphasize the legislation and the mandate from the legislators on the appropriations for groundwater. So there was a total of 100 points available. This was an interagency review. It was an interagency development of the request for proposals, including Department of Health, Natural Resources, PCA, and Department of Ag. Here's an overview of the competitive review process. I realize it's a little bit difficult to see on this screen, but in addition to the Clean Water Funds, Bowser also had a number of grants that were available through our general fund appropriations that were competitive in nature. So rather than have our local units of government jump through the competitive process multiple times, we packaged all the grants together in one application. So what this shows you is the Clean Water Fund is in blue, and that included the feedlot water quality management grants, conservation drainage grants, and then the runoff reduction grants, which were available to watershed districts and watershed management organizations, shorelands grants, clean water fund assistance grants, and to the counties, the SSTS grants, and then we also included through the Department of Agriculture their Ag BMP loans. The yellow or buff colored portion is for the general fund competitive grants that we had available. So we packaged them all together. The application period was open from October 15th to December 1st. And in a very, very, very abbreviated time frame of less than 1 month, we went through all of the recommendations, the ranking. It goes through the interagency ranking team, and then it comes to the Bowser senior management staff. Then we submit it to the recommendations to our Bowser committee, grants committee, and then finally to the Bowser board. They were presented on January 28th, and the recommendations were approved by the Bowser board. I just want to highlight some of the results and some of the information about the grant application process that I think are pretty interesting. I combined these three pools of funds, which totaled the majority of the funding that was available for competitive grants. That's the runoff reduction. That was the one that was available to watershed districts and watershed management organizations. Clean water assistance grants, which was available for all of our local units of government, and shoreline grants as well. On these three, we received 42 applications. There was $7 million available for just these pools of funds. Just so you know, there was about 200 applications received in total for all of the funding available, and there was a request of $44 million for funding out of the money that we had available. Both for all of these three pools of funds, they address both protection and restoration very, very well. Some examples on this slide and the next slide. In the metro area, one example is the Minnehaha Creek Watershed District received $224,000. And this is to focus on the Diamond Lake impairment. And this is heavily involved in citizen engagement, citizens ready to proceed, putting in rain gardens, putting in pervious pavers. It is really, really a citizen engagement process. We wanted to use that as an example for the variety of things that we saw coming forward. The Ramsey Washington Metro Watershed District received $500,000, and this is to address the Coleman Lake impairment. This is an infiltration project at the Maplewood Mall. It reduces phosphorus into that lake from that watershed by 60%. And it's a great demonstration project to learn about how we do this in highly pervious areas where we don't have a lot of land left to put in conservation. This filtration project actually happens under the ground. And so all of the benefits are in place, but it's not taking up a lot of land. In the North Cannon River Watershed Management Organization, they received $150,000 to extend conservation reserve contracts on CRP acres for another 10 years. So that helped 67 acres of highly erodible land. Some of the outstate projects that I'd like to just highlight for you, up in the Northwest, we have the Pelican River Watershed District. They received $250,000, and this is to complete a long-term project that's been in place they've been working on for several decades. That started with the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, and now this actually is bringing to fruition all of the research, all of the recommendations, and it's putting a project on top of the federal WRP program, which was put in place to make this happen. It reduces phosphorus from this watershed into the Detroit Lakes chain of lakes by 50%. Wilkin County is doing a number of projects out in the ag area, $250,000 they received to do a number of protection projects along ditches, and they have been very successful in putting these projects in place so far, so they ranked very high. Clearwater River Watershed District is both on the same project, working on a trout stream as well as reducing runoff into an impaired water, and they treat 90% of the stormwater that is in this area of Kimball before it goes into the trout stream. South St. Louis has also got a restoration project on Knife Creek, which is an impaired stream, and so that's up in the northeastern portion of the state. Aiken County received $73,000. This is a tri-county effort in order to protect Mille Lacs Lake. Includes a lot of shoreland protection as well as some infiltration projects. And in Goodhue County, they received $105,000, and this is to address the Zumbro River impairment. It's an interesting project in that Mineola Township came forward and asked for the SWCD to submit this proposal. They've been working in cooperation with them. The township is actually levying a matching amount. They believe so strongly that this needs to happen because the sediment is troublesome for their roads and their road maintenance and their ditches, as well as what it does to the Zumbro River. So it's a very interesting project with a lot of community support. The subsurface sewage treatment system and feedlot grants combined them onto one so that you could see where those were distributed. The SSTS projects for the imminent health funds that were provided, that will go to 11 different counties, upgrade 52 systems and two cluster systems that have many, many homes on them. The SSTS enhancement grants that went out also went to 14 counties. And that money is going to help provide inventory of SSTS around 30 different lakes and three different river stretches. It also allows these counties to upgrade their systems for their database in order to really track what's going on. Feedlot projects, 53 feedlots are going to become upgraded and compliant, and those are targeted towards riparian areas. On the technical assistance funding, we had $1.25 million available in technical assistance funding. We have allocated $921,000 of that. What we did with this funding was a little bit different. It was available for a competitive grant, but it was not with our grant program. It was actually tied into the 319 program that the PCA put out last year, their RFP. They had over $6 million coming to the state through the 319 program. That's more than any money at any given time in 319. And the 319 requires a 45% match from the local sponsor or in-state funds. And so what we did is, in order for our LGUs to actually be able to use that $6 million available and meet the match, we tied our technical assistance funding into that. And so if they applied for it, they were eligible for 20% of their match through our technical assistance funding. So that's how we got $921,000 out. Rolled into 319 grants, which go towards impaired waters. It addresses nine TMDL projects and helps to leverage over $2.5 million in federal funds. The remaining funds, we continue to pursue the federal dollars that are coming to the state through a number of different programs, including the Mississippi River Basin Initiative, as well as the Great Lakes Initiative. On conservation drainage, we only had $200,000 available. We received over 15 applications and over $1 million in requests. That's over five times the amount of funding that we had available. These were reviewed by the Interagency Drainage Management Team. There were five projects that were selected, and they do a number of different things, from reducing the speed of which all of the water hits the ditch in order to reduce sediment, as well as putting in sediment basins, side inlet controls. And all of them must do monitoring on their programs, on the success of their programs, as well as some outreach. So those were all the grants that we had available. We also had some easement funds that came our way that we implemented and have been very successful. The first one that I'm going to talk about is the riparian buffer easement. We had $3 million available in this fiscal year. We our sign up for the funding became available on November 1st. All of the funds were allocated in January. So in less than 2 months, all of the $3 million were already spoken for. We acquired 86 easements, more than 700 acres. We put these easements on top of CRP acres. So the CRP isn't permanent. Now that conservation effort that the federal government has already paid for becomes permanent. We also have $3 million available in fiscal year 2011, and we have already received enough interest in that to lock up that funding. So in essence, we will probably not be doing a sign-up anymore with the remaining funds because it's been allocated. On the wellhead protection easements, these are very, very targeted. We work with the Department of Health in order to determine the most vulnerable wellhead areas in the state and those where we know that we can get some conservation easements on the ground. This map demonstrates the seven wellhead protection efforts that are being targeted. We are working to acquire those easements right now. We had $1 million available this year and $1 million available in 2011, and without a doubt, those will be secured very soon. And so that is the summary of our clean water funds, our appropriations, and what we have done to implement those programs, and I'd be happy to take any questions.
Questions? Sounds like you've been very, very busy and making the money just expand and expand as best we can. And so we have many more projects than would have been available otherwise. And that's a good thing.
Yes, it is.
And there's, but it also sounds like there's increasing interest. And so as we accomplish some of the goals and outcomes, then more issues are of concern to people that they want addressed and additionally. And so it still sounds like we have a long way to go.
Madam Chair, I believe that we do have a long way to go when you look at the amount of interest just from this first round. And people, we're this year, with our 2011 funds, we actually had a meeting yesterday, and we'll be meeting with the MPCA after this meeting to talk about how we're going to try to get the funds out sooner this year, so that there more planning can be in place during the winter months, so that they're ready to go when the season breaks in order to actually do this on-the-ground implementation. So we expect even more demand and more interest out of the next funding round, which we hope to get out late summer, early fall.
Representative Tarkleson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To the testifier, Ms. Blackburn, are all these funds available on a statewide basis?
Ms. Blackburn.
Madam Chair and Representative Tarkleson, most of them are available on a statewide basis. The funds that are available to watershed management organizations and watershed districts are only available where there are those organizations.
Representative Tarkleson.
Another question. Thank you, Madam Chair. How closely related are these funds to TMDL projects and or the list of impaired waters?
Ms. Blackburn.
Madam Chair and Representative Tarkleson, that was one of the highest ranking criteria. And so on the protection efforts, the way that we looked at protection efforts are anything that is not an impaired water, that's targeted towards protection. Anything that was impaired or part of a TMDL implementation plan is that the restoration program dollars that we put out. And so we believe that they're very strongly tied because that was one of the highest ranking criteria that there were.
Representative Houseman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Among those lines that I have most residual anger about in terms of the vetoes are the RIM dollars. And all we're hearing now from are all those people who regret it. That was a time when all of the environmental groups and all of the sportsmen came together around one line. And one wonders, why didn't more people fight harder when it was possible? Including, sorry, I won't say including who. I've been approached in the hall more than once in the last 24 hours about how we save this. And one of the questions they asked was, can't we take debt service from the cultural and outdoor resources to save this? I mean, that's what people are now talking about. But, you know, when we sit around the table and value something but then don't fight for it and don't vote for it, it is never going to get the job done. And we'll still be sitting here 5 years from now and saying there's still much work to be done. I mean, ultimately, this is the work we do, unless there are votes at the end to accomplish this, just are always going to leave us at this point.
And you're absolutely right, Representative Houseman, and it's distressing to all of us, and it should be distressing to this committee, because of what you said, they're saying, can't something be done from these funds? But they forget the constitutional language that talked about this committee cannot supplant. And that was recommended by the Environment Finance Committee with the intent of making the best use of the federal monies that would match it, and giving this committee then something to build on to. And now we can't build on to. We left federal money sitting on the table. And exasperates the problem that Ms. Blackburn said that in the initial round of funding that this committee made, and appropriations to supplement, we are stuck now and going backwards rather than going forward. And it's either because people took it for granted that the appropriations and the recommendations, I mean, that were made from Environment Finance to the Bonding Committee was just a given. But it's, am I correct in remembering that it's something like $23 to $33 million of federal dollars that are left on the table now because we had that?
She probably knows the exact number.
Ms. Blackburn.
Madam Chair and Representative Hausman, it's about $35 million.
$35 million.
Federal.
Of federal.
Federal dollars. That some other state will be able to use. Ms. Representative Lagunias?
No, I was just going to say federal, and just to remind members that 2 years ago in the bonding bill, there was the exact same amount with the exact same match that was signed by the governor. So
I don't know. I wasn't consulted.
I wasn't
you were
either.
Consulted. Ms. Blackburn, were you consulted?
Madam Chair, I was not.
Or your agency. So I'm sorry we weren't watching it better. Representative Lilly.
Madam Chair, do we have a commissioner or someone that might have made that decision available in this room at this time?
I don't think so.
Thank you.
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As long as we're talking about the bonding bill, I question's been rolling around in my mind as to, perhaps Representative Hausman can help me with this. How did those projects all get packaged into one bundle, that $25 million RIM bundle? It seemed a little bit unusual.
That they come from the finance divisions recommended to us.
But haven't some of those been separate projects in the past? Or am I mistaken?
Representative Guinness.
The recommendation was the exact one that we had done 2 years earlier. And it was signed by the governor. There was no difference.
Madam Chair, the piece I'm most familiar with has to do with Area 2, and I believe Area 2 is funded separately, as a separate line item in the past. I could be mistaken because I'm a youngster here, so I apologize for my lack of knowledge.
Oh, I understand what you're saying.
Representative Guinness.
The dollar amount was the same, but there was request. And I can't remember, now you're testing my memory, Area 2 had not had a specific carve-out, not additional money, but of the $25 million. Area 2, I don't believe, had a carve-out 2 years ago. This year, there was, I believe, $2 million carved out that was available to, not a mandate to, but available to Area 2 if they wanted it. That's how it read.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Blackburn. We appreciate your efforts.
Thank you.
Forrest Bowe, Director of Parks and Trails, DNR. People are out on the parks and trails these days, Mr. Bowe. On these nice warm days. A couple of weeks ago, I was up at Gooseberry Falls looking at the frozen water that I bet isn't frozen any longer.
Madam Chair, members, thank you for having me here today to talk about the Parks and Trails portion of the Clean Water, Land, and Legacy Amendment. The apportionment that went to DNR Parks and Trails. And yes, we have photos up on our website immediately as that ice was going out, so you can track that stuff. It happens very quickly in a matter of hours over the evening, and our park manager happens to live very close and can actually hear it breaking up and was able to go down and see much of that as it was happening. So exciting events happening all the time out there. I'll wait just a minute until you get the report passed out, and we should have a few extra copies for members and or people in the audience. Again, thank you for having me here. I wanted to share some of the key outcomes and expenditures for the first 9 months of our new Parks and Trails legacy funding. As you may recall, the 2009 session law had three main areas, three main objectives were included. Those objectives included connecting people to the outdoors, accelerating natural resource management, and accelerating facility maintenance and rehabilitation, along with, in each of those areas, utilizing the Conservation Corps of Minnesota to assist us in accomplishing all of those objectives. In addition to that, there were several planning initiatives that were identified in that session law as well. So I'll talk about, try to talk about a little bit about all those things. As you may know, a lot of work that's going on. Some of those things, some of those projects, some of those initiatives, we were able to implement immediately, and others required some planning, some design work, and of course some strategic prioritization to start to complete those items. So as we move into the spring, I think you'll see a lot more on-the-ground construction, maintenance, natural resource work, and activities for our visitors. All of those things will increase. First thing I wanted to talk about was the grant program that was identified. There was dollars appropriated and a new grant program that was established in 85.535. We solicited grants in November and awarded grants to the tune of about $3.4 million to local units of government for acquiring, developing, and restoring and maintaining park and trail facilities. And in addition to that, we'll be awarding another about $4.2 million worth of grants as soon as the that particular money becomes available, I believe, July. So sometime in July, we would be awarding the next round of grants. Currently, the solicitation is open still for those grants. March 31st is the deadline for the next round of grants. In addition to those grants, there were also some solar or solar energy grants that were identified.
and we awarded nearly $500,000 of solar energy grants already, and another nearly $600,000 of the solar energy grants will be awarded this summer. So doing quite well with the amount of dollars that were budgeted and now being expended in the area of the grants to local units of government. The second category that I wanted to talk about a little bit was connecting people to the outdoors. As you will recall, that was one of the main objectives, one of the three main objectives. We've been instituting a lot of new programs. We've got many more naturalists that are at work in our state parks and on our state trails. We've got a new Minnesota Naturalist program that will be hiring 12 additional naturalists for this summer. We're doing additional trail interpretation for our Root River Trail. We've got web improvements. We have 5 virtual tours now that are complete, so you could go on DNR website and actually take a virtual tour of a state park so you can see what you're going to get into. You can look at some of the campsites, you can see the buildings, you can look at the facilities, whether there's a lake or a beach or some of those things. And I think people are really looking for that prior to going to a particular facility. We're also upgrading a major visitor center at Sibley State Park, and that particular visitor center focuses on education and new technologies in reaching people. We have trained a lot of our staff in producing touch screens, and it's a kind of a situation where you utilize a screen similar to what we have in front of us here. And through some new technology, we're offering those touch screens in various parks so that people can learn about the park, learn about the resources there, and just a little bit different way of trying to reach new populations that might be a little more in tune to the electronic world than maybe some of us are. In addition to all of those things, we've got a lot of fishing poles and fishing tackle out there in state parks, and of course, we're providing those to connect people to a fishing opportunity, and those would be free to use in any of our state parks. As long as you are coming into the park, we want to make those available, and that does kind of coincide with free fishing in state parks. You don't have to have a fishing license if you're fishing in a state park where all the land on a particular lake is surrounded by the park. So again, trying to make those connections to people that may not have experienced those things in the past. The next area is accelerating natural resource management. And with these additional park and trail funds, we've been able to do additional restorations in our state parks. As you can see, a 71% increase over our average yearly acreage that we restore. We're also conducting an increased amount of invasive species detection and prevention, and doing additional prescribed burns as well. So making good progress there, and this is one of those areas that you will see a lot more work coming this summer. Moving on to the accelerating facility maintenance and rehabilitation, with these funds, we're going to be able to rehabilitate about 30 miles of state trail this summer. This is one of those areas that has taken some planning and some design. So some of the areas I've talked about previously have been those areas where we were able to put things out fairly quickly. This is an area where having to complete engineering designs and doing some planning. We're looking at repaving some of the Sakata Root River, the Munger State Trail, and some bridge work on the Paul Bunyan State Trail. In addition to that, we have some buildings and facilities being upgraded at Jay Cook and Lake Chetek. Lake Chetek, a new campground being a major renovation there, bringing electricity into more of the campground, trying to meet the needs of current camping users. We also have several accessibility improvement projects underway, and this is trying to reach out to those populations that maybe haven't felt that we've provided enough areas where they can get into, whether it's a building or some other kind of facility. But having those people with some kind of a handicap or limitation in their mobility, providing upgrades to our facilities to allow them to enjoy facilities as well. Doing a lot of bridge work, rehabilitation and replacement, construction. Again, one of those areas that needed to have some planning, some design work, and doing a lot of bridges and repairs with this, with these dollars as well. We also put some resources into our winter programs in state parks, so accelerating the winter grooming in state parks, providing more opportunities for people to get out and enjoy winter opportunities. Of course, all of this utilizing the Conservation Corps of Minnesota, and I think we will exceed our requirement of spending at least $600,000 in fiscal year 10 for the services that that they perform. And so really getting a lot of good work from the Conservation Corps of Minnesota, and you can see some of the hours that they've completed. And really they are involved in nearly every aspect, every part, whether it's connecting people to resources or accelerating facility maintenance or accelerating natural resources work. So really utilizing that program, and they've been a great help in accomplishing all the things that we need to accomplish. Finally, we've been working on our own 10-year strategic plan for DNR Parks and Trails. In addition to that, we have made a lot of progress on the 10-25-year long-range plan or long-term plan for how we would use the money that this legacy program will provide for Minnesotans over the next 25 years. And to that end, we have identified or we have in place a 14-member steering team. We've engaged the Citizens League of Minnesota to help us design a public participation process. We have 18 regional meetings scheduled throughout the state so that we get good input from the public. And additionally, we've got some web survey tools and opportunities for people to engage that way as well. So just a lot of things happening on a lot of different fronts. I've got a lot of background detail information, but kind of wanted to keep it at a higher level. Otherwise, we'd probably be here for a significant amount of time. The one last thing I would add is that we did complete the Parks and Trails budget analysis, and I want to thank you for giving us the opportunity to do that. It was great for us to gather the information. We've used it and used it again, and I hope you found it useful as well.
We have, and Representative Haas.
Thank you very much. I would like to compliment people's efforts on the 10 and 25-year plan. I've heard a half a dozen comments, all good. That's unusual. To get something that's going wrong, to have a barrage, a litany of phone calls that this is wrong, somebody took my money, you know, my car window is broken or whatever. But to actually have people step forward and say they think this is in balance, that the committees were selected fairly and so forth, I'm very impressed with that. I'm impressed with them calling me and telling me that. I think, again, to emphasize, as you heard the other day, when you start getting conflicts, there is a whole section of regional areas that are underserved or unserved, and it is a good investment because you don't have to pay PILT, and you don't have to do the maintenance, and you don't have to do a whole lot of things, and so you get a lot of bang for your buck, and nobody's telling you, please don't put the damn thing here. Thank you. So there. So I have that written down, you know.
Feel proud, Ms. Bow. You talk about free fishing licenses in parks that have lakes totally within the park, and you here it says that you delivered fishing poles and tackle to 30 state parks. So 30 state parks have free fishing?
Those would be the parks that actually have a lake that are totally surrounded. And so those are the ones we started with. I do believe there is free fishing poles and tackle to be used in places where they still would be required to have a fishing license.
Oh.
We don't have a water base in all of our state parks, but I know like Fort Snelling, if you're fishing in the lake that's right there surrounded by parkland, you can fish for free. If you're actually out on the river, then you're required to have a license.
So is that on your website where you can have free fishing?
I believe it is, ma'am, Madam Chair.
I'm going to check. Then I'm going to check to see if they got fishing poles, and then I'm going to go fishing for the first time.
I hope your bobber goes down.
I'm going to find a lake. And refresh my mind. Did we just talk about DNR being in charge of designing the logo? Or did we charge you with designing the logo?
Madam Chair, I believe we are assisting with the design of the logo, and we are engaging the arts folks as well in doing that.
I just didn't have it in the front of my mind, and so I appreciate that. So two different funds talking to each other is good, too. Hey, Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm sorry, but, you know, I'm just fresh off these vetoes, so everyone sitting up there reminds me of a question.
How are we taking it?
I wonder if Mr. Bowe can give us any history, whether he recalls ever a time when all state trails were vetoed.
Madam Chair, Representative Hausman, I've only been working in the central office for about the last 5 years, and I would not have any memory beyond that. I don't recall that in the last 5 years.
Madam Chair, you have the particular challenge here of the supplement supplant challenge, mm-hmm. and we've had now two in a row where that there was a significant blow.
Yes.
In the parts we traditionally do in bonding.
And we're going to feel it for a long time. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Metropolitan Council. Mr. Stefaru, welcome.
Thank you. Madam Chair and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Arnie Stefford. I'm a planning analyst in the Parks Program at the Metropolitan Council. And I'm going to be utilizing the annual report that was submitted to the legislature on March 1st regarding the fiscal year 2010 appropriation of the Parks and Trails Fund, and it's in your packet. That legislation appropriated $12,641,000 in fiscal year 2010 to the council, and there were requirements in that legislation on how to spend those funds, so I'll summarize that. First, $40,000 must be spent as a grant to Hennepin County to plant trees along Victory Memorial Parkway. That grant agreement was authorized last July, and the funds have been encumbered, and design is underway for where those trees will be planted, and those will be installed, I presume, this summer.
And you remember that Representative Mullery and Representative Carlson were to assist in the planting.
Well, I will pass that on to Hennepin County with the grantee, so they'll make sure that they do that.
Representative Carlson, Representative Mullery, both know that they were going to assist.
Very good. The second requirement was that the remaining portion of the appropriation, in this case $12,601,000, must be distributed to regional park implementing agencies as defined in state law. And those park agencies are listed on page 2 of the report. There are 10 of them, so I won't go through all of them. Members of some of those agencies are here today. Those agencies were allowed to determine how to spend their portion of the appropriation as long as it supported regional parks and trails under their jurisdiction. And again, last July, the council authorized grants for their allocation for particular projects. And then the third requirement in the law was that 10% of the appropriation must be used to finance land acquisition for regional parks and trails. And that appropriation had to be matched with $2 of Metro Council bonds for every $3 of state funds. So in this case, $1,261,000 of Parks and Trails Fund money is matching $840,000 of Metro Council bonds. To date, we have not awarded grants out of that appropriation. However, there are several acquisitions that we are considering now, and I expect that there will be some grants awarded in the near future. Page 4 of the report clusters the grants into categories and illustrates where money is being spent by those categories. Briefly, there's two projects for natural resource and rehabilitation that total $190,000. There's four projects that would fill trail gaps that total $1,854,000, etc. And then where those projects are located are shown on page 5 of the report. And then the remaining portions of the report then illustrate in a lot of detail individual projects, including who to contact if you have a question about that project, the description of the project, how much has been dispersed to date of the funds appropriated for that particular grant, and then a budget for that project that illustrates how the money would be spent, looking at construction as well as internal and external professional services. And then finally, there's proposed measurable outcomes for each project. The law requires us to explain and measure the effectiveness of these expenditures. So since these projects are underway, they're not completed yet, we're proposing how we're going to do those measurements. And then we'll report that to you in future reports. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions that you have.
Mr. Stafford, did anyone come forth with land that you could use for that one portion where you had to have added land for parks and trails?
Madam Chair, yes. We're looking at least two projects, one in Washington County, one in Minneapolis, that would be utilizing the funds from that appropriation.
Any questions? Thank you very much.
Thank
Looks
you.
Like you have a good start.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, I did have one question.
Oh, Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just a second, I had one question about the Met Council, and that we had noted that the DNR is doing a 10 and 25 year long range plan update based on the fact that the legacy plan update based on the fact that the legacy funds have now offered new opportunities. Is the Metropolitan Council Parks and Open Space Commission undertaking anything similar?
Madam Chair and members, the council has its own parks policy plan. We are updating that. Right now we're required to do a comprehensive review every 4 years. But we are also participating in the 10-year and 25-year long-range plan required by the legislation. I serve on the steering committee for that. We've been working with regional park implementing agencies on scheduling outreach meetings, so we're actively involved in the plan that's required by law.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Becker. Thank you for being willing to come down on short notice.
Madam Chair, it's my pleasure to be here this morning. As the status report that we're going to go over is being passed out, I want to make a few comments in preface. As many of you know, one of the things that we do that in the council that's similar to what's done in the Legislative Citizens Commission on Minnesotans, Legislative Citizens Commission on Minnesota Resources, is to have each program or project that is appropriated money, fill out an accomplishment plan, and then regularly report their achievement under that accomplishment plan. And what you have in front of you is a two-page summary of the information that we've gleaned out of the accomplishment plan status reports that were submitted to us in February at our request. Before I go into it in detail, I'd like to make one correction. And it appears that the x-axis labels on the summary of acres impacted is off by a factor of 2. So 500,000 should be 250,000, 400 should be 200,000, and then the graphic reads correctly. In FY10, the legislature funded 19 programs totaling $66 million. Program managers received their appropriation authority to spend starting July 1st. They did not have authority to be reimbursed until November the 1st. So in some cases that affected when people got started on their work in the field. Much has been accomplished to date. 51% of the appropriations have been legally committed. By that we mean they're under contract, either a purchase agreement to buy land or a contract for work in the field, design work, or things of that sort. The acres impacted are significant owing to the Forest Legacy Project in northern Minnesota, which we account for as legally committed and done. It's set to close July of 2010. Agreements are all in place. The dollars legally committed are $34,609,000, and that excludes the conservation partner grants, which are in process. There are 34 grants handed out by DNR. They include things like grants for the City of St. Paul Parks and Recreation for restoration, the City of Burnsville for restoration, Becker County. If you all would like a list of those grants, we can provide them to you. If you turn to the back page of the handout, as I said earlier, the Forest Legacy Project was the focal point of fiscal year 2010 achievements thus far. The Conservation Partner Legacy Grant Program awarded 34 grants. We're really gratified to see the partnerships between non-governmental organizations and state and federal agencies. They're thriving. Specifically, and volunteerism is alive and well, with Minnesota Trout Unlimited contributing well over 600 hours to restore and enhance cold water fish habitat. One of the important things for you all to know as we go forward is Anoka County has closed on half of the Rum River Cedar Creek acquisition, which was funded in FY10. The other half of that acquisition is in the recommendation that will be before this committee shortly. They need that money to complete the acquisition of the full 550 acres. The Green Corridor program that works in the Minnesota River Valley has closed by now, I believe, on 277 acres that are adjacent to or near wildlife management areas along the Minnesota River Corridor. This is a good example of something that the council is trying to promote, which is acquisition of land where there are already concentrations of wildlife habitat and land. There's a synergistic effect when you get to a specific density of habitat that's a very positive synergistic effect. It doesn't do a lot of good to acquire habitat out in isolated areas, but if you have complexes of habitat, some of which is publicly owned, some of which is private working lands that provide habitat, the benefit to the creatures is significantly higher. I wanted to point out that the first project completed was the lowest one ranked, which is an interesting phenomenon. the Shell Rock River Conservation District. They've completed the installation of fish barriers on three locations at Fountain Lake, and this has prompted a joint project with DNR and the Watershed District to repopulate the lake with game fish. Two other interesting things. Some program managers have reported that appraisals are lower than expected. Hopefully that means that we will have more accomplishments. And then wet weather and heavy snowfall have hampered or delayed enhanced restore activities, especially in the prairie region. And as a way of example, one of the important things to do in the prairie region is to clear off woody plants, trees that have grown up in the protected and owned prairie. And one of the program managers, DNR, in fact, reported that the effort to do that was much higher as a result of the snow, difficulty in getting MCC crews in, and things of that sort. The REM WRP program selected 51 projects, and topographic surveys are underway. Field work is expected in fiscal year 10. Lake Rebecca in Hennepin County is another interesting project with some progress. They completed the design of the project, restoring 500 feet of shoreline, and have also put together a plan to address the curly leaf pondweed in the lake, and expect to go forward with the treatment of the lake for curly leaf pondweed in the spring summer of 10. Lake Rebecca is an exceptionally important resource. It's a muskie brood lake, so muskies are raised there and transplanted to all parts of Minnesota. So with that, I'll stand for questions.
It looks like you're working too, making progress.
Madam Chair, our program managers are working very, very hard and hopefully are on schedule.
Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You may recall that a few of us were nervous about creating a new bureaucracy when we debated the paid staffing for an advisory council. I'm just curious, in this early stage, how much was appropriated and spent this fiscal year for administrative costs?
Mr. Becker.
If you will bear with me for a second.
Sure.
The FY10 approved budget was $695,000. We have a current unspent balance of $255,000. Yet to be programmed, including $12,000 for mapping and an MMB project to do some pre-planning for the completion of our 25-year plan. I can get you a copy of this if you're interested.
It sounded like I've got a total, though, for fiscal year 2010, $695,000.
Yes.
Is that?
And our request for FY11 is $600,000. These are unusually healthy requests because of the 25-year plan commitment and the need to bring on extra staff in the form of MMB to complete the plan. We have a framework, we think. We're going to validate that. But we don't have the kind of detail that we think is necessary for a good 25-year plan.
Any and your staff positions have been filled?
We are completely staffed up with a staff of three, including myself.
And your location?
I'm glad you asked that, Madam Chair. We are in 85 on this floor. So if you walk out that door, we're down in the corner. And we love visitors.
Yes, and very welcoming. Representative Lockwood.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Becker, you noted that the property appraisals are running lower than anticipated. I mean, we're seeing property values of all sorts fall. Are you seeing that then also translating into less expensive easements? Your comment here relates to additional acquisition, but is that also translating through in the easements, and how are we keeping up on that?
Madam Chair, Representative Loeffler, we have not had it reported that easements are coming in at a lower value, but it stands to reason if property values are falling because the easement is based on property value appraisals, that we would see some reduction in easement costs.
Thank you very much. Members, on Monday, we are having the legislative auditor is going to appear and give us the results of the audit for state libraries or the libraries across the state, and that will be released to our committee first because we were the ones that were requested it. And after the legislative auditor tells us about libraries, then we're going back to the land audit and with DNR. And we have submitted, based on our discussion last week, we have submitted the questions that have been submitted to me, and then the questions that were asked or the comments that were made to the Commissioner of DNR and to Bowser, Mr. Jasky, at Bowser. And so they will come prepared to answer those questions or address the comments that were made. And so we will probably, we will have the meeting on Monday night starting at 4:30, I believe, but it will probably continue after 6, too. And this will be our chance to really get our answers, questions answered. I think we will probably try to use the same process with the library study as we used with the land study, because then we're making the best use of our time by submitting things in writing and saying what we want addressed. Since we don't know about the library study, I don't know when we will ask them to come back, but they are going to reveal the outcomes and their recommendations of that to us. So I would think that the meeting will take at least, all total, at least 2 hours. So,
Madam Chair,
Representative Haas.
I was just going to be excited about moving the minutes of March 15th to be approved.
Thank you so much.
I couldn't hold back, and I jumped on your comment there. I'm sorry.
Representative Haas moves adoption of minutes of March 15th as printed.
Just like to be on the record that I was here.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The minutes are adopted as printed. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was going to use the opportunity to remind members to fill out their topic selection choices, because as of 2 days ago, only 45 out of the 201 members had filled out their yellow sheets. So
I did mine.
I submitted mine earlier, but if anybody doesn't want theirs, I'll submit theirs for them.
Yes.
Just pass them on to me, bring them to the floor. I'll be glad to fill it out for you. All right, this meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much.